Hi everybody, Dan Lucart here once again from Brea Jiu-Jitsu, continuing my podcast series on performance-enhancing drugs in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. This is the second part of this series, and this one is going to specifically be addressing HGH use and abuse. So this entire discussion was stirred about an article posted on jiu-jitsubrotherhood.com. I'd recommend you log on to that website and find the PED use in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu article and have a look at that, because a lot of what I'm saying is a counter or maybe additional information that would persuade the potential user away from performance-enhancing drugs. I'd like to start with a quote from Nick's article about growth hormone. It says, quote, "This is my favorite of all the performance-enhancing drugs I've experimented with. I'm actually on a cycle as I type this, doctor prescribed, of course. I find that it helps me recover much more quickly after tough sparring sessions, especially now that I'm in my 30s. It has been instrumental in healing the cumulative 15 years of hard martial training has done to my body. It also makes me sleep a lot better." So that's kind of his stance, and I feel that his views are reflective among a certain percentage of jiu-jitsu practitioners as well, which is why I feel that this discussion is relevant and important to have. A little bit about what HGH is. It stands for human growth hormone, as I said before, and it's a stress hormone that raises the concentration of glucose and free fatty acids in your body. And excessive production of growth hormone stimulates the production of another hormone called insulin-like growth factor 1. And it's important because I'm going to talk a lot about insulin-like growth factor 1, and that's abbreviated to IGF-1, so if you hear me say that, you know what I'm talking about. It's kind of interesting, the history of human growth hormone in disease indications, because I was a biotech investor, and every biotech investor knows the study of Genentech. And Genentech is one of these companies that everybody wants to emulate. Everybody wants to be on the early stages of Genentech. Essentially what they did is they started with, they were the first people to synthetically do insulin, and then they took their expertise in insulin, and the next drug that they had was human growth hormone, so they were the first company to synthesize that. And human trials, if I remember correctly, started in 1981, and the approval was in 1985. And it was mainly used in child growth disorders, and things where HGH production wasn't being produced inside the body, which is particularly important for children. What I'm going to be trying to do is I'm going to try and show what the potential consequences of abusing HGH is, because there's this perception among sports performance people that there isn't that many consequences as a result of its use, because it's far less studied than steroids and other things. And I think there's additionally confusion between testosterone replacement therapy and human growth hormone, because what I'm seeing on the forums is just kind of like an overlap between the two, and people aren't understanding that there's a difference between the two. So human growth hormone is primarily used in adolescence by our body. For example, if you want to type in Google and see HGH production by age, you can see that most graphs that I came upon with that were backed by studies, they started around 1800, 1900 micrograms for 10 years old, and that drops to over half by the time you're 20. So by the time you're 20, most of your HGH production is tapered quite extensively, and then a gradual taper increases until you're 40. But most of the shocking drop-off of human growth hormone is about 20 years old, and that kind of coincides with your growing period, because when you've grown up, you don't really need human growth hormone as much. It seems to make sense. So what I'd like to do is I'd like to establish over a course of studies that HGH boosts insulin-like growth factor 1, which can turn lead to health consequences. So this study is titled Insulin-like Growth Factor 1 and Prostate Cancer Risk, a Population-Based Case Control Study. And I received some questions regarding my first part of my podcast. Are these studies peer-reviewed? Yes. I'm essentially just a guy with Google and PubMed. It's an excellent source for really scholarly articles and studies and things like that. Most of what's on PubMed, they don't differentiate between peer-reviewed, but most of what is on PubMed is very well-respected, including this study, because it's kind of a landmark study within insulin-like growth factor 1. So this study was 434 people, and it found a moderately strong and statistically significant, p equals 0.04 if you're interested, positive association between IGF-1 levels and prostate cancer. And the association was even stronger with men who were younger than 70, which is particularly interesting because prostate cancer risk increases as you get older. It generally, you don't see it more risk as you're getting younger. So there's a particularly interesting finding related to this study. An additional two studies can be used because they also made the link between elevated IGF-1 levels and increased risk of cancer. And in these, it was particularly colorectal cancer. And I'd like to actually link you an article through Harvard, which deals with a couple of different studies. And you can log onto this website. It's www.news.harvard.edu/GAZETTE/1999/04.22/IGF1.story.html. And this article talked about a number of studies, particularly relating to IGF-1 levels. And these are referred to as the Channing Laboratory studies. And the first one studied 32,826 nurses. And what they were able to find is that those with the highest IGF-1 levels had 2.5 times the risk of colorectal cancer. There's a kind of a sister study that went along at the same time, and that's 14,916 doctors were studied, produced identical results. And these are long-term studies. They followed these people from 6 to 14 years. So these are long-term studies documenting some of the consequences between cancer risk. In the first one, it was prostate cancer, and this one was colorectal cancer. So it's important to understand that these studies studied healthy people, just average Joes, average nurses, average doctors, and they just measured their natural IGF-1 levels and then made the link between people who had higher levels and these various forms of cancer. So what I'm not saying is I'm not saying that taking HGH will get you cancer, because that's not how it works. What it does is it actually increases your risk of getting these cancers. And there's an interesting quote by the man who did the, let's see, what study? The nurses study. His name is Edward Giovannicini. I'm not Italian, so I apologize. His last name is Giovannucci. And he's a professor at Harvard and in the Department of Nutrition and led this study. He said, quote, "There's good biological rationale for the associations we found. When IGF-1 is added to the dishes of cells growing in the lab, the cells flourish like flowers blooming in spring. In children, the hormone stimulates bone growth and development of organs such as the heart, liver, and kidneys. But in older people, rapidly proliferating cells increase the opportunity for genetic mutations that may lead to cancer. And once cancer cells begin to form, IGF-1 will promote their growth as well as that of normal cells." Essentially what Edward is saying is he's saying you can't selectively promote growth in one area. For example, in jiu-jitsu, you're looking for improved muscle growth and recovery time. But unfortunately, you can't just selectively grow muscles. There's a whole host of consequences, so that people who are having or predisposed risk to these various type of cancers is promoting their cancer as well. This has consequences if we're trying to get older people in jiu-jitsu to use HGH to train jiu-jitsu or enjoy jiu-jitsu better, because the older you are, it seems that the more risk that you're going to have for HGH and IGF-1 to promote your cancer as well. So I think that turning a blind eye to the use of HGH in older hobbyists is particularly irresponsible, because they're the ones most likely at risk for some of the more serious side effects of continual HGH use. Now, there's been no studies done in healthy population for HGH at the levels that you would see for sports performance enhancement. Like in the previous part, that doesn't mean that we know nothing about its safety profile. We know what it does to IGF-1 levels, And we can then look at all the literature of information on what increasing your IGF-1 levels will do to your health. Now, there's a couple of interesting diseases out there which deal with HGH. And just like I gave the analogy of how we learned in psychology by studying extremes, we can do so by studying the extremes in overproduction of HGH and underproduction of HGH and seeing what the consequences are to the human body. There's a disease out there called acromegaly, which is essentially a disease caused by excessive secretion of growth hormone. This is not for performance enhancement. You're not sticking a needle into your butt and getting acromegaly. It's a legitimate disease. If you want to read about acromegaly, the most informative website that I found was called UpToDate. It's uptodate.com/contents/acromegaly-beyond-the-basics. And you can see some of the side effects of having too much HGH in your body or long term will do. So let me read a few of those. It's enlarged hands, enlarged feet, facial features become broader, longer and swollen, your tongue enlarges, your lower jaw grows, soft tissue around the voice box grows, overgrowth of bones, high blood glucose, that's a very important one because high blood glucose in your body has drastic effects on your overall health and well-being. So if you wanted, you could further research the effects that high blood glucose level will have on your body, particularly diabetes and other things as well, and tumor growth. So essentially, in this disease, acromegaly, you're seeing some of the exact things that you're seeing corroborated by other studies having to do with increased IGF-1 levels. And I think, just on a subjective level, if you think of these side effects, a deepened voice, enlarged facial features, lower jaw growth, I think we can all actually think of a few people within the jiu-jitsu community that have these features. They're not maybe exclusively growth hormone because some of these side effects overlap with steroids as well. But you can see, literally see with your eyes, some of the side effects that are taking place. And even though you can see some of the side effects in enlarged hands, enlarged nose, and things like that, even though you can see them, it's the stuff that you can't see that's scarier. It's the stuff that takes a while to manifest itself. And it's kind of interesting, back to what Edward was saying, is that among older people, that rapidly proliferating cells increase the opportunity for genetic mutations, which may lead to cancer. It's kind of an interesting point of discussion, is that the body naturally produces less HGH as you get older, perhaps in some sort of evolutionary sense to prevent against this. It doesn't really make sense to have a whole bunch of growth hormone in your body at the end of your life when there's a bunch of mutations that could be promoted through HGH production. It makes sense when your body is growing, which is what you see in terms of HGH production that occurs naturally. And some of our information, like I said, can be discerned by studying diseases like acromegaly. Here's one study, and particularly these next two, focus on the HGH effect on the brain. So I'd like to talk about that a little bit. So this study has to deal with acromegaly, which is the increased production of HGH in the body. It's titled Cognitive Function in Acromegaly, Description and Brain Volumetric Correlates. And this is a 2012 study, so it's a recent study. And what it showed among your mental capacity performance is that 33.3% had impaired attention of acromegaly diagnosed people. 24.1% had impaired memory. 16.7% had impaired executive function. And 67% failed at least one subset of these three things. And how they described impaired attention in this particular study was the 16th percentile. That's pretty darn low if you're familiar with bell curves. Just keep in mind that there's a lot of people that may have missed the cutoff, but were close to the cutoff as what they defined as impaired attention, memory, and executive function. So excessive growth hormone in your body also lead to impaired cognitive function. So take a look at that study. And I feel that nature crafts a balance for us. This study deals with too little HGH production and its effect on the brain. This study is called cognition in the adult with childhood onset GH deficiency. GH is, of course, a growth hormone. A meta-analysis of 13 studies is what this particular one used. So it studied other studies and kind of put them together. It said growth hormone deficient patients had moderate to large impairments in attention, memory, and executive function compared to matched controls. GH treatment was correlated with improved function. So when they put growth hormone in people with too little, they had increased function in their attention, memory, and executive function. So it's kind of interesting. We have one study that shows when you have too much HGH in your body, inhibits cognitive function, and too little HGH in your body inhibits cognitive function. So too much bad, too little bad, and Goldilocks just right is better. And it's kind of interesting because this is often confused, like I said earlier, with testosterone. And I looked up a study that dealt with the incidence of adult growth hormone deficiency. So if you're saying, oh, my HGH levels must be low, you can kind of have some perspective on how many people actually have adult growth hormone deficiency. This figure that I'm going to give to you here was from a study titled Incidence of GH Deficiency, a Nationwide Study, and it's done in 2006. And the incidence rate was 1.65 per 100,000 people. So a little less than 2 people, 1.5 people per 100,000. So that gives you some perspective on how many adults are suffering from growth hormone deficiency. So these are some interesting points related to HGH. And anytime you put something into your body, it's going to affect all aspects of your body. It's going to affect your brain. It's going to affect your body. It's going to affect your cells. So use this. Research a little bit more about what excessive HGH and IGF-1 levels do to your body. And don't read what you take on forums or in articles as justification to start a performance-enhancing drug regimen.